This is J. Lewis Mills, and you are about to be put on the level with J. Lewis Mills. Whether it's truth, controversy, good news, or bad. If it offends you, I'm sorry. If you agree, that's great. We talk about it all here because everything needs to be put on the level. Come in and join the conversation. I promise you'll be glad you did.
Away we go. How are you all doing this week? This is J. Lewis Mills, and you got me on the level with J. Lewis Mills. I hope you all had a good week this week. Well, I'll say it like this. I hope you all had a good week this week, considering, you know, all of the tragedy that is still going on. I don't understand what's going on nowadays. We're having... It's almost getting, whether you believe in the Bible or not, it's almost getting a bit biblical how all of these tragedies, both natural and premeditated, are happening. So, you know, if now is not the best time to really start reevaluating and start looking out for each other instead of just yourself, then I don't know when a better time would be. But that's not what we're going to be talking about today. Today we are going to have quite the amazing show, in my opinion. a couple of weeks ago, I had a guest. Her name was Winterbrook Ryan, and she had actually spoken to me about my guest today. My guest today is Jacob Cooper. He is as well from New York, and he does work in the same profession to an extent as Miss Ryan did. And because we have so much to talk about, I'm just going to jump right in it and let Jacob tell you about him, and then we'll get to the question. So thank you very much, Jacob, for joining us this week. I greatly appreciate you taking the time to come and share with myself as well as my listeners. How are you, sir?
Well, thank you so much. What an intro. What a ride. Thank you so much for having me on. And I thank our good friend Winterbrook Ryan for connecting the two of us. I mean, she's fantastic. You can't get better than her. And she spoke such, you know, praiseworthy words of yourself. And it's a true honor to be joining you on this East Coast, West Coast radio program that we're having today. So it's an honor. Thank you. A bit about myself. I currently am a licensed social worker, and I work, you know, primarily as a mental health counselor. You know, I run psychotherapy sessions in a clinic. I also run mindfulness groups within my clinic and local in local colleges as well as colleges in the city. I run mindfulness groups. I run mindfulness classes throughout the country. I'm a certified hypnotherapist, a Reiki master. I have my own practice in. I know we were talking before. I have a group that I'm the director of the Long Island chapter for the International Association for Near Death Studies. We have a once a month meetup group, and it's quite a fascinating organization. I was just featured out in the Denver conference where I was side by side with some New York Times best-selling authors at hand who were also presenting in the group, notably Dr. Eben Alexander, for any of you listeners have heard of him, was one of the keynote individuals who was there, and I got a chance to speak to him. And right now I'm the first one to start a Long Island chapter for the International Association for Near Death Studies group, or IANS group, here in Long Island. So, between hypnosis groups and hypnosis sessions and mindfulness groups and the IANS and seeing clients individually in my clinic that I work at, I kind of have my hands full, but it's all healing from the ground up. You know, that's kind of my philosophy in life, and I'm glad that I'm able to try to help people, you know, because I don't really do the healing, the people do it themselves, but give people opportunities to heal in many different ways and change their lives to be more of a, you know, manner which they kind of dreamt of and envisioned prior to this lifetime. So it's been quite a whirlwind of events these last couple of years with all these changes happening.
Yeah, it seems as though you have your hand you have your hand in a lot of different pots, to say it in a proverbial way. Is it easy to juggle everything that you do? Because, you know, they all kind of, in a sense, go together?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it a difficult process that you had to get used to be there for everything that you're doing?
Well, you know, when I was younger, I always wanted to be, you know, like a Tony Robbins guy or a Wayne Dyer type, where I would just get the podium and write a book and speak. I didn't want to necessarily go into social work or graduate school to do it. For me, I just wanted to go and heal people in a deeper way, but, you know, more from a distance. I didn't think it was going to be quite as interpersonal, you know, as it is within my own, you know, kind of, you know, day job. But for me, it goes with my philosophical viewpoint, where, you know, in order for myself to really understand people, I have to understand people from a ground-up perspective. You know,
yeah.
It's like if you want to build a house, you have to start with the base. Without the base, the house falls. And, you know, for myself, working in social work has been the greatest blessing. And, you know, I'm blessed to work with a lot of clients in the lower socioeconomic, you know, totem pole. So I get a pulse of the struggle, and I know you were kind of, you know, talking about some of the, you know, socio-political struggles that many of us are going through, and I do see it. And that gives me more inspiration for my work from a ground-up perspective, you know. And the whole goal is to empower clients and to improve what I would like to call self-efficacy, which is the belief in their own ability to thrive under any situation. And I really am able to believe in my clients in a lot higher of a degree from having a near-death experience, because that taught me a lot in this life, and it gave me a lot of passion to help people kind of navigate their own existential psychology in a way where no matter what you're going through, there's always hope, and that's needed now more than ever, you know, in today's climate.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I'm
very passionate about bringing that forward today, especially in this hour today.
Especially, and I'm so glad. Thank you very much for saying that, especially in this hour.
Yeah.
Now, what I would like to know, Jacob, is you've spoken about it a couple of times, near-death experience. And when I read your bio, I also saw OBE, which is out-of-body experience.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain, or can you give the correct or the scientific definition, or tell the difference between a near-death and an out-of-body, even though it may seem common sense what the difference is? Can you give the scientific definition and difference within the two? And I also understand that you yourself personally had a near-death experience, and if you would be so grateful to share that with us, I would appreciate it also.
Yeah, you know, the NDE... you know, phenomenon, a near-death experience phenomenon, you know, technically could also fall under the umbrella of an OBE because you are out of your body, you know, but an OBE, every OBE doesn't necessarily indicate that you have an NDE. And there's also a third, diagnosis that I have, which is spiritual transformative experience, which could be an NDE, could be an OBE, or could just be something other than, you know, life-altering event. So within, you know, my support group that I have, you know, many people are going to come in and discuss any of their experiences that change their lives, because what people forget is, you know, part of having all these crazy experiences is that there is a trauma when you're not able to explain it or process it. And diagnosis and mental health give people a relief for what they have. You know, there's downsides. It could also be very limiting. And thank God we had an individual like Dr. Raymond Moody, who's been one of the forefront individuals who have diagnosed those terms that I just mentioned, the NDE
yeah.
phenomenon, the OBE phenomenon, the SDE phenomenon. But an NDE experience refers to a near-death experience, and that's when you're in that incubation period between life and this planet as we know it and the hereafter. And, you know, many people think, you know, they may have had an NDE, and, it, you know, no one's to say that you've had or hadn't. And I think you just have to go over some criteria. Many people who've had NDE talk about their body shutting down, their brain shutting down, suffocating, and all functionality just going at the wayside, and you getting into another place and crossing over. You know, OBE could be just assessing what we would like, what I would like to call your own astral cord, where you really are able to, you know, tune into your astral cord and just leave your body. That could happen via trauma or a shakeup period. You know, you get into a car accident and it's too traumatic for you to kind of have, and you just, so to speak, leave your body just to protect your psyche and your body. You know, it could be shell-shocked, or you could work through kind of like rigorous spiritual practices to kind of get it in the line. Your energy centers and learn how to increase your own spiritual vibration so that you're able to learn how to access your silver cord and just leave and go into the astral plane and you know, be a free, unencumbered, disembodied spirit that you are. And we do that, you know, out-of-body experience happen when we usually sleep. We're not, you know, in our body. We're traveling into the astral, but this happens in a conscious state. And spiritual transformative experience, or STE, is anything that's been life-altering to you that has been what I like to call a shake-up period, you know, because for anyone to go on this path, you know, pretty much everyone has had a spiritual transformative experience, because in order for, you know, any of us to question what we've been, you know, experienced or how we've been seeing the world, we need a kind of shake-up to really allow ourselves to question the reality that we've been conditioned in through schooling and through religions that have been passed down to us. So spiritual transformative experience could be an awakening, could be enlightenment. You know, it could just be that small aha moment, as Oprah kind of, you know, says. So, you know, it's varying degrees, you know. So one experience does not outweigh the other. It doesn't make it sexier or anything
more important.
You know, better than, if there's anything that I've learned in this business, is that we all have canvases in front of us, okay? And we're all artists, and you know, some of us have these downloaded, you know, images or life-altering events that happen to us, but it's, you know, the real work is how we process it. If we're able to have a platform of sharing and, you know, discuss it with family members or friends and, you know, have some healing from it, then look, that's where the real work lies, you know. So you could be a man in the Himalayas seeing Jesus on a daily basis, but if you're not sharing, if you're just holding on to, if you're not painting your canvas with what you kind of saw, as limiting as it may be, because, you know, our words always limit what we have, but at the same time, they're unlimited in what they can do here on the earth plane. So it's a real groundwork and grunt work that you do with whatever awakening that you have. Part of my vision and goal within my group is to empower participants to recognize that, hey, it may not be a big deal to you, but look, we live in a world that we're not operating in a vacuum. You know, we need all the help that we can get, and if you had something that may help, you know, come out and share it, because, you know, your experience is not about you. It's about others. You know, we're here neurologically proven to be connected, you know, so the more that we share, the more that we recognize there's a lot less divisive factors to ourselves, despite what we kind of feel on another kind of level, you know. So it's, we're creating our own kind of government here with in the absence of, you know, at times.
Now, before you do tell your story of your near, your near-death experience, I do have a question.
Sure.
With you being a professional and with you holding these groups that you hold every month, just to play devil's advocate a little bit, how do you know, or is it possible for you to know, if someone had a real experience or if they are just taking you for a ride? And to go along with that question, have you ever had or been in a situation where you thought it was a hoax to some degree?
Right. Well, you know, it's an interesting question. I think having my background, you know, poses me well to be in this kind of groups and to help people process it. You know, you could give people all kinds of answers, but a lot of it, you know, the groups that I run, it's exploratory. It's not, I'm the Pumbaa of the universe and I know all these things. You know, this is a journey that we all take, you know. But in my own professional experience, okay, it helps me out, because I recognize that, look, if you're having threatening voices, you know, telling you to do all these kind of crazy things, or If your experiences are very dark and threatening and stuff like that, you know, it's usually, you know, maybe a possible psychotic break. So you always want to, you know, check that first if it's really threatening or kind of scary. It's not to say that all near-death experiences are rosy, because they're not. You know, there's the bodily trauma that happens with your body shutting down, you know, that happens from a near-death experience or a traumatic health, you know, crisis. So it's not all kind of rosy, as you'll kind of see. But, you know, people come to me and they have, you know, stories out of kind of left field. It's exploring, having feedback from the group members, allowing the group members to really kind of comment in a respectful kind of manner. And, you know, privately, if I feel that it's psychosis, you know, I may take that individual and kind of explore, you know, options, you know, that they may be able to be helped from a ground-up perspective. If it's really interfering with their own day-to-day task and, you know, functionality. So that's how I kind of work. But I think, you know, you ask a very sound question. I think my background, you know, kind of prizes me in a good situations to really, you know, hear the words, but kind of look through them through, you know, different set of eyes from all my experiences and backgrounds and stuff like that. So.
Have you had to go that route with any clients that you've had?
You know, in my own, you know, agency, that does happen, but, you know, not so far as of yet, you know,
okay.
But I'm braced for that because I see that every day. So,
yeah.
You know, it's, not,
okay.
It's nothing new to me if someone's telling me that, you know, someone's after them, they want to shoot up something or who knows what. And, you know, look, that, you know, really could be addressed from a pharmacological kind of perspective. And, you know, that may be something that may be able to help. You know, with, you know, some medication really allowing the neurotransmitters to be more in alignment. So, you know, you always have to look from stuff from a ground-up perspective first before, you know, kind of entertaining it on a higher level, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yes, it does. And
you
also, I know I said I want you to explain your experience, but I have one more question, which will kind of lead into you telling us about the experience that you had. But as far as just the near-death experience, the out-of-body experience, and the transformational, I'm sorry if I'm saying it wrong.
You got it. It's
okay.
It's extended. I like to use the abbreviations because it can get very difficult to remember.
Okay.
But it also sticks,
okay.
It sticks with people if you use abbreviations because they'll be likely to remember that. The other stuff, as you probably could tell, it's a bit tongue-twisting.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is a bit. Until you get to know it, it is a bit.
Yeah. Even for me, I kind of stumble sometimes.
But in the realm or thinking through all of those, the NDE, OBE, and STE, was this a fascination for you before it became a profession, or did this become almost like a calling for you when you had the experience that you had?
Well, it was a calling from day one. You know, the second I had this, I was able to look in the past as well as the future, as I'll kind of get into. So I did see what I would be doing in this lifetime, and it was a tease because I saw myself doing this kind of work and, you know, how deja vu works where, you know,
yes.
There is no such thing as time. It's all unraveling at one moment, and our linear analytical minds aren't able to really understand that because we've been hardwired to process time in such a different manner. But when you cross over, you see things 20, 30 steps ahead, even beyond this lifetime and before this lifetime. I was able to see it clear and crystal as a 5-year-old guy, but I forgot about it for a while. It really wasn't entering my mind. You know, I was about 18 years old, and I was at a yoga seminar, and this individual came up to me, and she goes, "Do you mind if I give you some information that just has come to me?" I go, "Sure." And I didn't speak one word to her. I don't know who she was. This was a yoga seminar in the middle of nowhere. And she goes, "I'm looking at your aura. It's quite potent. And I do see you speaking in front of a lot of people one day. You're going to be a healer, and you're going to change lives." And I go, "Jesus, are you talking to the right guy?" Because at the time, I was struggling, you know, to get myself even into a community college. And I was, you know, taking remedial courses in a local Long Island college. So I was like, me to be speaking in front of people. And then she allowed me to re-remember, you know, my contract and what I really kind of vowed to do to myself and to spirit. And she must have been an angel, because I asked around for her name and who she was, and she told me a lot of other stuff that came into happen. I've paid for, you know, psychic readings throughout the years, but this person was by far, hands down, the best reading I've ever got, free of charge, by the way. So, wow. You know, sometimes the greatest readings happen when you're not kind of looking for it, and it just,
yes,
spirit
do.
Has a way of just coming to you when it's not forced. That's kind of how life works, but when it's meant to be, it'll be. You'll be given the information that you're meant to hear at every given moment at time. You know, there's higher governing forces at hand, you know, for our own spiritual evolution here. So that, you know, was appropriate and was needed. And without her, I don't know if I would be where I am today, but how many of us could say, you know, that about ourselves? You know, everyone makes a difference in our lives, whether we see it or not, good or bad, you know.
Do you mind sharing your experience with us now?
Sure. I just have to clear my throat, as that song says. But I hope you don't mind.
No, not at all.
I was quoting the song with "Let me clear my throat." I hope you don't mind. But no, bad humor. Anywho, this happened, you know, in the mid '90s. I was about 5 years old, and at the time, I had something that was called whooping cough, which, you know, before I went to the park, I was endlessly coughing and I couldn't stop. But, you know, I went to a park with family, friends, and, you know, we went in a car, and I was looking forward to just having a good, grand old time and going on the slide and enjoying myself. And, you know, while in the car, I felt, you know, incredibly nauseous, and I felt some kind of force in the corner of my eye almost just taking me in. It was just like the hour of death that I knew it, but on a conscious level, I was just ignoring it. So for me, I just went to the park, and I went up a slide, and, you know, I went on top of the slide, and I tried to breathe in air, and then literally nothing came out because I had whooping cough. And then, you know, I caught myself suffocating while I was on top of the slide, and I tried to breathe in air, and then absolutely nothing came out. And then slowly every part of my body just began shutting down one step at a time, almost like you go into a basement, you shut off a power breaker, and, you know, one by one, I felt my body, every part of it just shutting down. The last part that I was in, I was looking down on was my brain, and I was able to look down on my brain and see at 5 years old and understand my brain inside and out. You know, when you're in a disembodied state, you have a higher form of intelligence, and they say we only use about 15% of our brains, and that, for me, was true, because in this lifetime, we have neuroscientists, you know, studying the brain with the brain. And at 5 years old, I was laughing to myself of how we try to understand the body with limiting factors. It would be like taking your hand and trying to understand your hand with it, you know. So to understand, you know, our bodies, we really have to use that 85% that's not used. And that's not taught enough in med school. Fortunately, you know, at least a couple of friends of mine tell me that. Who knows? But I think they're advancing a little bit in their training. You know, as I was looking down on my brain, I was able to see every different functionality and part of it. And then, you know, just suddenly my brain just snapped in half. Like you take out a plug and pull that out of the wall. My, you know, and you get all the sparks kind of going all over the place. That's exactly what happened with my brain. Just snapped in half. And then everything just opened. You know, I was able to see from my right side what I would like to call the palace of God. And bear in mind, I was going down a tunnel at some insane speed once my brain kind of shut down, and I was vibrating at some insane speed, going higher and higher with no end. And to the right side of me, I was able to see the palace of God, and I was able to attain what I would like to call Christ consciousness, and I was able to hear the vibration and name of Christ over and over and over again. It was quite powerful. And then to my right side and my left side of me, I was able to see my two spiritual guides who, you know, came into this lifetime with me and helped me in the charting phase. And, you know, to me, spiritual guides are the closest extension that you have to yourself within this lifetime. They're your real home base. And then, you know, my guides were beautiful and magnificent. I knew who they were instantaneously. And they went down the slide with me, and I was down the floor, and I saw everyone around me. My body was on the floor, and I saw, you know, everyone's individual auras and their own spiritual guides around them. And as I looked up, I saw about hundreds and thousands of angels right in front of me when I was on the ground, and it was just a sea of angels that were just kind of floating up and down ever so peacefully, but just sending healing energy to the moment. And they wouldn't even look at me or look at anyone around me. They were just kind of just staring straight off ahead and just kind of sending energy to their own being, and they were in kind of like a brown, gold-like color, and they were almost like childlike cherubim, and there was about hundreds and thousands of angels just peacefully just floating up and down, just right in front of me, you know, like literally like I'm looking at a person, you know, just right there. I could physically pretty much almost touch it. And then slowly I was able to get drawn to my spiritual family, which is, family members that you incarnate and reincarnate with since day one. And immediately I was drawn to them, and I knew who they were, what their names were, who they were about, and instantaneously. It wasn't necessarily gender, but it was just their energy that I was able to witness. And, I saw them, and I felt, real embarrassment because, it's like when you come into this lifetime, you have a charting period, okay, where you plan out your whole lifetime and you make all your promises to your team, and it's almost like going out to war and, 5 days later you come home because you're chicken shit to come back home, to go to war, I'm sorry. So that's, to me, what it felt like at 5 years old, where I had all these promises, and here I am kind of crutching to mom's leg before going on the first day of preschool. So, I felt quite embarrassed in a way. So it's like a kid going home from sleepaway camp or something on the second day, and then everyone was kind of looking at me, and I was looking at them, and I was posed, the most difficult question in short of my lifetime, which is, what are you going to do right now? And I was surrounded by hundreds of angels right in front of me, and my spiritual guides, and my soul family, and I said, what do you mean? They go, are you going to stay here on the other side with us, or are you going to go back into this lifetime? And I said, well, that's a really hard question. I can't answer that. Now, you mind showing me a couple images and glimpses of what this lifetime would be? And then they're able to show me just flashing imagery of what I would be in this lifetime. And all of a sudden, I was drawn to a lot of people in a crowd, and I was presenting. And it wasn't that I was some pompous, guru who was so much better than the participants in the crowd. What I saw was that this message that I was sharing and the energy from the message wasn't mine. It was just rather spirits. And I saw the spiritual vibrational frequencies increasing of every participant in the crowd and their own souls evolving from the message at hand. And I said, as beautiful and as magnificent as the other side is, I can never turn down this message. And then slowly, that image kind of went away, and I was able to look at my own Akashic records and look at different, lifetimes. And I kind of, asked myself at the time, why am I having this powerful experience? And then all of a sudden, I was drawn back to a lifetime, my last lifetime, where I had what I would like to call a great hubris, where I reached great pedestals of success. But it all got to my head, and I, took my own life at the end. And I saw students of mine who I taught in that lifetime, and they were so, and I was, getting very emotional on the other side. And for me, I kind of got it as to why I had that experience, because, when I crossed over, there was, an allegory of the light at the end of the tunnel, that no matter what you're experiencing, the other side is awaiting and the other side is within, and there's always hope, there's always promise, and what you see today isn't always is. And, if anything else, that's my greatest takeaway from having an NDE, because so much, of my work, has dealt with people who have anxiety or depression or people getting stuck in their temporary sensations. And I think if you're able to see that life has an evolution pattern, life, changes, and change is unavoidable. Every 7.5 years, biologically, we do change. So if you believe in the light at the end of the tunnel strongly, that could get you out of almost anything or any place or anywhere. You had, Holocaust survivors, and I'm Jewish. There was one individual who wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning, and it's all about existential psychology and understanding, your outside situations don't define you, that you have your own inner prism, which is the mind, which is your attitude, which is your sense of focus, and that's something that no one could take from us. It's not defined by anything tangible or anything outside of ourselves. And, I was very empowered to help clients or help people down the road, come to that realization, that life is very much on your own terms, and the paintbrush is never taken from your hand, despite times when it may feel taken from you. So, after that, after I said that I would commit to this lifetime, and I was able to tune into other lifetimes, and particularly in the Bermuda Triangle in a civilization called Atlantis, which, if you have any questions, I'll answer down the road. Eventually, all my guides and all the heavenly and celestial beings just kind of disappeared. And then, I was left with one question I was just asking: how do I know this dream will all occur? And you know, we had the late Louise Hay from your state of California who just passed, and, you know, she was very big in the law of attraction. She was, you know, the founding father in positive psychology as we see it today. You know, mm-hmm. and one of her greatest things was, you know, your thoughts are your reality and they're your highways, and, you know, they're what shapes this lifetime. And that's the exact message that I had at 5 years old, where my God's told me, you know, you have a vision, you have a life, and that's not necessarily guaranteed, though. That's a possibility as long as you follow your highest thought and your greatest good, and you watch your thoughts, because your thoughts are your most important, you know, source and resource for this lifetime. And then, you know, eventually everyone kind of dissipated, and I was left in a hospital bed, and you know, my mother was distraught, and she was crying, and then eventually I woke up, and I had a whole lifetime to process the Alpha and the Omega, whatever happened to me.
Yeah, you know, right.
That took a long time to really process everything. But I woke up, and I was the most pissed off I've ever been in a long time, because you turn down heaven, and then I was woken up on a hospital bed with doctors all around me, and it was just, you know, I felt so PO'd, because it's just like, geez, you turn down the light of God, you expect to have Joan and Melissa Rivers interviewing you on the red carpet, but that was far from true. I was getting needles and shots and all these kind of things, but thank God for them. You know, they saved my life. Without them, I wouldn't be here today, because I suffocated, and you know, I had brain trauma and, you know, bodily trauma, and they saved me, so I wouldn't be where I am today. So thank God for doctors and medical personnel. You know, you all wouldn't be here today.
And you said that you were 5 when this happened?
I was 5 years old.
Okay.
Biologically, so, my instrument was 5. But we'll, you know, I'm sure we'll get into the other age or the other angle that I have to look at age.
Yes, that's actually what my question for you was going, or is. But I thought of this while you were talking. You had such an advanced experience at such a young age that I know some adults that would have had, if they would have had that experience, it would have either wrecked them or it would have changed them considerably.
Mm.
So because you had that, and it's very important to me now, that you actually said your instrument was 5. So I guess this kind of answers my question already. But with this happening with you at the age of 5, were you really even able, from that moment on, were you able to be a kid anymore? Were you able to be a child anymore? Because it would seem to me, having such an advanced situation, such an advanced experience, that's going to, if anything, that's going to speed up your maturation process almost, to me, almost out of this world, just because you are faced with so many different things that you have to deal with in this experience. So were you able to stay a kid after that?
It's very complicated to kind of go over, because, you know, you look at the two age polarities that we have. You know, you have, you know, young kids, and you have senior citizens. But to me, those are some of the most misunderstood age demographical populations that we have, because senior citizens,
absolutely,
they have all the earth-based wisdom. And younger kids, when you think about it, they're almost like fresh out of the oven. They're fresh from the other side, and they have the most, you know, innate wisdom, and they're not as, you know, they don't have as many human layers that block truth to them that are built,
yes,
up or inherited, and all these stories and inherited outlooks that block away from people from their own truth. You know, I look at it that we come in this lifetime with a diamond, but, you know, if you do the real work that I do, you know, such as mindfulness and meditation, you're able to take off a lot of the dust and, you know, kind of build up, you know, from that and rubble from it that you get from living in this lifetime with so much suffering and pain and, you know, so many inherited stories that are just not true, or perceptions that are just false, that are just humanly constructed. So, you know, to answer your question, you know, when you're young and you come to this lifetime, you come with an immense amount of clarity. We all do. And that's why at 5 years old, to me, it was just so natural, because I didn't have all those layers, you know. And I think when you're going forward in the human experience, it's almost as if, in a way, spiritually, you go backwards, you know, in a way. It's like we feel like we're getting older, but in a way, we're getting younger. In a way, we're forgetting, and there's a lot more what I would like to call spiritual amnesia that comes when, you know, as we kind of walk the planet further and further for those who don't consciously practice what we're talking about or don't try to re-remember their own truths or just have a forgetfulness or get involved with someone else's truth or, you know, get disempowered with their own spiritual path. You know, the way I saw myself, I was, you know, not as a five-year-old as you would see. I think what it is you come into this lifetime with a soul that's, you know, you have soul ages, you have young spirits, you have old spirits. But to me, you know, soul ages is not limited. You know, your soul is not limited to any information at hand. What happens is as a society, we kind of misunderstand kids. We look at them as being 5 years old, but these kids have lived, you know, maybe 50, 100, who knows how many lifetimes before that. So they're not what we think. You know, so we get kind of limited when they're speaking and goo-goo-gaga or not saying too many words or stuff like that, and we kind of just see them at face value without looking past, you know, what the eye meets. So, you know, I think, you know, growing up, it's all about the instrument and the soul coming more in harmony with one another. And as you're able to evolve and grow up and, you know, all the biological changes that happen in your instrument, you know, you really don't neurologically hit your stride until your mid-20s, you know, you stop developing. So, you know, so much of this is, you know, development. Your soul and your instrument are trying to get in parallel with one another, and they adjust to one another. It's like a fish. You put a fish in a bag, and then it gets kind of acclimated to the water, and that's kind of what's happening with our body. You know, so we're getting used to kind of speaking in this new body. We're getting acclimated to the soul and the body and the two kind of interacting and feeding off of one another. So it's an adjustment incubation period that happens for a while. But on a subconscious level, you know, all truth is known with kids. You know, you just have to have proper practice. You have to stay true on course to your path. But unfortunately, so many kids grow up and they get, you know, their filters get kind of dirty because they inherit so much crap, so to speak, from, you know, individuals that are handed down to them and so many, you know, limited truths out there. So that's kind of what happens. So the biggest key, if anything else, is keeping kids empowered and looking at them, you know, as wise and evolved and not as brand new, you know, because that's a human illusion. And, you know, there's factors where you do have to kind of treat the body as kind of new and understanding that they're adjusting to this planet. But underneath all that all is something very old and ancient, a lot older than most people may think, you know, so.
Now, this is absolutely, Jacob, I promise you, this is not a play on words. I'm asking a serious question. But the fact that you were able to see a bit of your future, do you think that consciously or subconsciously forever changed your present just because you had a vision? What I mean by that is, you know, we can all aspire or we can all wish to be something and we can go down a path going to that way. Like, let's say somebody realizes as a child, I want to be a doctor. Okay, you know you have to stay in school. You can't mess around. You've got to get good grades. You've got to get into good school, medical schools. You know, all of that takes hard work. So a person that's striving to be a doctor, they don't necessarily know what it's going to take. But someone like you, you were able to see your future. So I don't want to ask it in a simple way as saying, did there ever come a time where you didn't have any money and you were like, oh, it's okay because I know what's going to happen in the future. That's not what I mean. What I mean is, was there ever a time that you said, even if this doesn't work out for me, whatever experience you were having, even if this doesn't work out for me, I know I'm going to be okay because I've seen my future. I hope that makes sense.
Well, absolutely. You know, for myself and my own personal struggle, when I was in community college and not even wanted to go to college, and I wasn't even allowed to take college courses, and I was in remedial courses, and, you know, I had just this distraught, and I hit the dark night of the soul, so to speak, within that moment. But every struggle that I ever had or every dark night that I ever had, I always clung to that vision, you know. And this is the kind of work that I work with on many of my clients where, you know, when people come to me in my mindfulness workshops where, you know, part of being mindful or part of experienced mindfulness is to kind of distinguish between goals and expectations. You know, I think people have visions of themselves, and then they try to kind of force it, and they get frustrated, and they get disappointed.
Yeah.
You know, mastery of each moment in finding value in the here and now, you know, makes it all sweeter to build towards what you have, but you're never fully there. You know, once you reach a certain point, or once you think you have, you're kind of done, you know, because life always changes, and you never hold on to anything. That's an illusion. So, you know, whatever vision that I had, it's nothing, you know, that stops. It's always growing towards that light that's just endless, with endless possibilities. You know, so it's more of just this light that I kind of saw as a possibility. But, you know, you're never constant. There's no retirement. There's no kind of saying, aha, here I am. You know, it's you're always striving towards that. But, you know, mastery of each moment, you know, builds towards that goal or that vision that you have, you know. But it's not to say that you expect it to come to you or that it's going to be handed to you or you have a certain expectations for how life should be. No, you make it how you make your life the way that it's right for you. There's no hand-me-downs, there's no should-be. You know, it's all, you know, it's all on you to put in the elbow grease necessary to reach, you know, your highest vision that you have. And it's if it's right for you, the heaven gates will find a way to open. You know, spirit will work with you, but you have to work with it. You know, yeah, you can't it's not automatic where you wake up with a wife by your side and kids or a medical school degree. You have to go out and do it. And, you know, I think we have the knowledge base that's a possibility, but we're here in this lifetime for much of the experiential reality and going through the trials and tribulations and growth, you know, that ever makes it ever more so sweet when you do reach it. And that fuels your passion to empower others to keep on climbing this forever-ending mountain, you know. But here and there, you have to stop and look down. That's okay.
That's actually a pretty profound answer, and I really hope my listeners heard what you said. And if not, then I'm telling you all now, make sure you go to the archive and re-listen to this show, because there's a lot of great information. Now, I posted yesterday, Jacob, that we were having I was having my conversation with you today, and I did receive a couple of questions I would like to ask you. Read one of them right now and get your answer on it. I got this from, this came from Facebook, and I will tell you, this is somebody that I know, so I'm not going to reveal the name, but the question is, I have had the ability to see spirits ever since I was 12 years old. We moved from Chicago, Illinois, to the rural part of Kansas, and in this house, I was able to see spirits that must have lived here before. Ever since that point, I can see spirits wherever I go. They do not harm me. They do not scare me, but I do not want to be visited. Is there anything, well, she says, can you please ask your guest, is there anything someone like me can do so that I am not visited?
Right. It's not, I can't say professionally, that's my area of expertise. You know, obviously, having an NDE opened me up to all kind of spiritual activity from a young age, you know, especially you recognize the brain as a filter between the two worlds, and when that's, you know, disrupted or, you know, given through all the trauma, I was able to really access, you know, I wasn't really able to talk a lot about life after the NDE. What I have to say is, you know, obviously the individual that we spoke of before earlier, Winterbrook Ryan, I know would be a great resource for that, but there's so many different groups of people who kind of specialize, in house cleansings and, clearing the air for ill-dignified souls that are in your home. You know, they usually work with kind of sage smudge sticks, and they, you know, ask the spirits to, in a gently supportive manner, to enter the white light and to try to, you know, guide them and make peace of whatever they're kind of clinging on to. But usually when, you know, a lot of these ill-dignified, you know, kind of energies come to us, they feel like they have unfinished business due, or they may feel earthbound or trapped in this forever dance, and they may not even recognize that they're dead almost. So, you know, a lot of it is just guidance and getting proper professionals. You could look at it on the internet. There was, you know, you know, and the term was so butchered. I know of one agency, it's called ISIS, and ISIS has its roots down to ancient Egypt, and they're kind of like a house-clearing, you know, type place, and they're, you know, they're pretty ethical. But if you go on the Internet and search, there's all kinds of, you know, facilitators that, that if you do your proper homework, that would be able to clear the energy and clear the air and have a, you know, a supportive, you know, therapeutic manner for, you know, these spirits to go where they need to go and not, you know, harassing or getting in the way of your own comforts of your home, so to speak. So,
okay. Yeah. Here's another question. This came from Facebook also. I read the biography of your guest for tomorrow. I have always wanted to be a public speaker. Can you please ask your guest, somebody like me that does not have a college education, what can I do in order to be taken serious as being a public speaker wanting to motivate people to be better than me?
Well, you know, absolutely. You look at one of the most influential, top-of-the-line speakers in today's world. He does a lot of NLP techniques, and he's been here since day one. You know, and his name is Tony Robbins. He started out in California, and he I think, dropped out of high school, if I'm not mistaken. He may have finished it, and he's a total pick-me-up from his bootstraps guy. So I think maybe, you know, reading Tony Robbins' book and his own story, it's called Awaken the Giant Within. I mean, Tony's worked with presidents and top-tier athletes, and he grows and grows and grows and always evolves his clientele and his experience. And the man is a walking genius. If you've ever seen the movie Shallow Hal, he kind of hypnotized Hal to see the inner beauty of an individual with Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
So he's, you know, he's one who really totally self-educated himself. He listened to tape after tape after tape of all the big self-help gurus and, you know, business leaders, and he, you know, was a real, you know, pick-me-up-from-your-bootstraps guy, and he taught himself everything. But, you know, genius isn't something that's taught. You know, he had that. I think he just kind of sharpened the diamond that he had in himself. You know, so I think, you know, looking at the guy who's at the top of our business and self-help and Tony Robbins, you know, just looking at him, you know, you don't necessarily have to have a college degree to be doing this kind of stuff if he's done it. You just have to have an immense willpower to work on yourself and an immense willpower to give over. And Tony's had so many, you know, life situations where he's grew up with, you know, in a really difficult, you know, home situation, and it wasn't easy for him. And, you know, that all of his difficult experiences has made him the man that he is today. I mean, without pain or suffering that he had, he wouldn't be where he is today. And that really opened up his own thirst to give over life that was different than what he had. And the man's just amazing. He's, you know, he's got the most intense energy, endless energy that you could, you know, see out there. And, you know, he's someone who's had an immense impact in my life. I hope I have the honor to encounter him, you know, in a physical, you know, interpersonal one-to-way. But, you know, if not, you know, I connect to him in other ways. He is a special man. So I think, you know, learning from the best, you know, that's how you get where you want to go. You look at any great basketball player, you look at Kobe Bryant or LeBron James, or, you know, growing up, they're watching videos on Magic Johnson or Julius Erving or Michael Jordan. They were able to incorporate parts of that in their games. So, you know, we all learn from one another's, but part of it is not, you know, stealing, you know, because that's unethical, but, you know, learning and being inspired and, you know, seeing their journey as paved tracks. You don't have to do this all on your own. You know, there's, you know, it's been paved before you, and it's a possibility. You know, when there's a will, there's a way, and that's right, it will come. But, you know, it starts with looking at some of the North Stars in our business, so to speak, and looking at yourself and your strength, too.
To just give my little Tony Robbins anecdote, I was invited to a dinner party, or more like a cocktail party, at someone's home last year. I wasn't told that Tony Robbins was going to be there. He wasn't there in an official capacity. He was actually there, you know, as a guest. And, you know, I'm walking through the place, and he was sitting down having a conversation. And when I say I was just stuck, I couldn't move. And the person I was with, I was like, dude, is that totally like Tony Robbins? Tony Robbins sitting right there. And she's like, oh, yeah, it is. And I was like, you didn't even tell me he was going to be here. And she's like, well, would it have mattered? And I was like, you know what? You're right. but just to be in the same room as him, just the energy and, you know, just whatever you want to say he is giving off, it's pretty strong. And for me personally, it was almost like just take in the moment of where you are right now, because 2 years ago, you were homeless, not even thinking that this was a possibility. So
that's right.
I absolutely get it. I absolutely get it.
And he all started with just putting a pair of sneakers on and just running the boardwalk and getting back on track, literally. Physiologically, the mind speaks to the body. When you're running, you're moving forward and pushing forward, and he hasn't stopped running since. And that's an amazing, and you're incredibly fortunate to encounter such a guy. And, you know, but Tony, you know, I think in his talks, he has something that says, "I am not your guru." And I'm not quite sure what that means, but I think a lot of it is just saying, okay, Tony Robbins is this great guy, but you know what? You're also great, and you have greatness inside of you. And it's not to say that Tony is, you know, this Pumbaa of anything, of everything. You have something great inside of you, and we're all interconnected. And whatever gear Tony's connecting to, you could also do that too. You know, it just takes a lot of discipline, a lot of hard work, you know, and a lot of, you know, dust kind of brushing. And, you know, maybe you're not Tony Robbins, but that wasn't your assignment. Your assignment was to be yourself.
Absolutely.
So that's your greatest bliss. There's nothing better than that. And if you'd be Tony Robbins, you'd be self-sabotaging and neglectful of who you really are. And
There's only one Tony Robbins. Tony Robbins is living Tony Robbins' life.
That's
you
right.
You can take from his life and you can use his life as inspiration or motivation, but to try and walk in that man's shoes, you're just doing yourself a disservice.
No.
You don't know what gifts are of your own you are eliminating because you're seeing yourself as someone else. So I absolutely agree with that 100%.
Right. You know,
go ahead.
You're at your best when you're just tuning into your own rhythm and dance. That's it. You know, and
yes.
Take some time to find that sometimes.
We are getting to the end of our conversation, Jacob. I am so honored to have had you. We are also getting to the end of 2017. So what does the rest of 2017 hold for Jacob Cooper? And what is the new year? What do you foresee in the new year for yourself?
Well, excellent. You know, I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing, where I'm going to be presenting a lot in colleges. You know, I'm going to be adding a lot more to my private practice for Reiki, you know, energy work and hypnosis. And I'm going to be traveling out to you guys in California. It looks like in September to speak at an IONS conference. It's out in Santa Barbara, so I'm already have that penciled in. And then I'm going to be traveling to Sedona, Arizona, and running a mindfulness workshop as well as a near-death experience and out-of-body experience workshop right in Bell Rock, Sedona. So that's right by, you know, Bell Rock down the block. So that's pretty special. That's going to be in March, it looks like. And then I'm going to be out in Seattle for the IONS conference in August. So that's going to be fun, you know, as well, too, for the annual convention, for the IONS convention. So that's pretty cool. So it's going to be a big 2018.
Any of these dates that you have, anything you have coming up, when our conversation is over, I will give you an email address. You just send me whatever links you have, and I will make sure that anything you send me goes up on my show page under the archives with our conversation today.
Sure.
So whatever you have, just make sure I get it, and I'll make sure it goes up.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of stuff is also on my event page on my website. So you can find me on my website. It's www.jacoblcooper.com, JacoblCooper.com, and there you could find me. So if you're interested in, you know, you had any questions or you're interested in some of my available services or would like to follow my next, you know, radio shows or events, you know, that's a way to really stay in touch with me. So, you know, it's always a pleasure when people
join
the family.
And in closing, Jacob, what words of inspiration can you leave myself and my listeners with?
Absolutely. I know from completion you begin, I always, you know, say, as my, you know, my mentor really told me. And I know we started talking about the whole social political climate where it's just so divisive and so split. And for me, that's why I'm so passionate about the whole, you know, work in NDEs, because, you know, we walk forward in this human experience and we have, you know, different religions, different political backgrounds. But I think if you get a taste of the other side, you really remember where you come from, you remember where you go to, and all these human illusions just go away. And that's the most healing in today's day and world, is unity, mm-hmm. is solidarity with one another, and understanding, you know, unity within diversity, and diversity's place with, you know, finding unity. And it's, you know, it's a necessary component towards our own evolution to accept others' differences, so long as they're for the highest and greatest good. So, you know, I think, you know, if people are interested, you know, in learning a bit more about the quantum physics that happens in near-death experiences, or quantum physics of the afterlife, and understanding it from, you know, spiritual basis, you know, IONS is a great resource, and you can feel mm-hmm. free to follow any of my talks and lectures to really allow yourself to, you know, not really learn anything, because I think this is all everything that we're connected to and already know, but just really remember your own truths, you know. So, you know, if that is anything that I could say, is just implementation of this in today's hour is so important, because, you know, heaven unites us all. And that's where we come from, that's where we go to, and there's it's just one light in many different prisms, but one light at the end of the day. So that's it.
I mean that's enough. I thank you very much. I thank you for being here this week. Listeners, just give us a couple of days. This show will be up in the archive. But as I said in the beginning of the show, and as Jacob alluded to in our conversation, you know, we are living in a time now where we can no longer not pay attention to what's going on. We can no longer, without trying to sound funny, we can no longer be bamboozled by the, I don't believe in fake news, so I'm going to say we can no longer be distracted by the distracting news. We really do have to come together as a people. We really do have to look at ourselves. And the number one thing, which is the hardest thing we all have to do, is we have to recognize the problems we are bringing to the table. Any and everybody can step to a table with their head held high, talking about the solutions. Oh, this is what I bring to the table. Okay, well, what problems are you bringing to the table that you are going to dispel before we start talking about the positives that you can bring to the table? Once we get there as a nation, as a people, as a world, then I believe the conversation can start. Unfortunately, I do believe I am not going to see that in my lifetime, so I can only hope that for one of the, if not the next generation, I hope that there is a change, because if not, we are all going to destroy each other, and at the end of the day, none of us are going to be here to celebrate the quote-unquote win. So I thank you all for joining me this week. Next week, right now I have a little something in mind. I really think I'm going to revisit this whole NFL kneeling thing. But this time, I think I'm going to have an industry professional to be able to come on and have a conversation with me. So make sure you tune in next week. If you have any questions for me, you can always send them to jlewis.mills@outlook.com. Make sure you check out my Facebook pages, J. Lewis Mills, my Twitter page, @JLewisMills. My Instagram, I believe, is @JLewisMills. Heck, my Snapchat is jlewis.mills. So make sure you get a hold of me, have conversations with me. I answer all questions. I love hearing from you. Having said all that, one more time, thank you, Jacob Cooper, for coming on. I look forward to having you again. We are out.
Are you inspired? Can I inspire you more? Come join me every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. on Station 2 here at BBS Radio. Let's get inspired together. Come join me. You'll be glad you did.